Welcome to Finding Faith, the space we come to share stories of encounter, ask questions, and share in the lived experience of others. As you listen to the stories of our interview guests, I ask that you consider the courage it takes to stand before your peers and share your experience of faith for the benefit of another. My name is Jesse Bennett, and this is the second episode of Finding Faith. Today, we have with us Danielle Rhodes. Danielle, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, I always hate that question, but whenever I'm told to describe myself, my thoughts always fly to the people always on my mind. My husband and my kids. I'm a wife, mother of two, almost three. I am a Kentucky transplant, moved here almost 7 years ago from Denver, Colorado, after marrying my husband, Jared. I was born overseas in the tiny island country of Trinidad and Tobago, but I spent most of my youth in Omaha, Nebraska, with two amazing parents and five crazy siblings. My household was loud, but vibrant. I'm not really a dog or cat person, although I think both are cute. I lived in larger cities all my life until moving to Kentucky, so I really had no idea how amazing rural community would be for my faith.
Danielle is going to share with us a little bit about her faith journey and what it was like for her to come to Catholicism. She's actually a convert to the faith. Danielle, could you tell us what that journey was like for you?
I'd be happy to. I don't really remember life before being a follower of Christ. I grew up in a Christian, specifically an interdenominational Protestant faith tradition. My parents are passionate about their faith. They cultivated an environment in our home where focusing on your relationship with God was welcome and expected. We went to church regularly, attended Bible studies, small groups, youth groups, retreats, and literally anything else you can think of. It wasn't until my first year of college that I remember consciously thinking, is this the path I want to continue on, or do I want to go a different way? It was honestly a pretty fleeting thought, a rebellious few moments when I considered what the world had to offer me versus what had become my norm and my comfort, really. Ultimately, I chose to continue on my faith journey. My beliefs wouldn't be challenged again in a real way until much, much later. Let's fast forward to my time in Denver. I was there earning a master's degree in community mental health therapy at Denver Seminary. This is a mostly Protestant seminary in Littleton, Colorado. There, I learned not only how to be a therapist, but also how to study scripture, the power of prayer, and more church history than I cared to know ever. Looking back, God was creating a trail of breadcrumbs that would eventually lead me straight into the arms of the Catholic Church. So that challenge that I mentioned earlier came in the form of a soft-spoken country guy from Kentucky with the cutest accent and freckles I had ever seen. Jared. He had stepped away from a decent career, his family, everything familiar and comfortable, to sacrifice 3 months of his life walking across this nation promoting the sanctity of human life, followed by 9 months of volunteer service through an organization, Colorado Vincentian Volunteers. When he asked me on our first date, it was a no-brainer. This was definitely a guy I wanted to get to know. When I hoisted myself into his truck for the first time, and I mean hoisted. It was a huge truck, and I am 5 foot nothing. I immediately noticed the rosary hanging on his rearview mirror, and I thought, well, dang it, Catholic. The one thing I thought I knew was that Catholic and Protestant did not mix well in a family. I never did the casual dating thing. If I didn't think it would work out, I was quick to end it. But Jared was different. He spoke about his life and faith with such passion and conviction. I had no idea that Catholics even believed in the Holy Spirit or even had an actual relationship with Jesus Christ. And here I was with this man in front of me, Catholic, so filled with the Holy Spirit and Christ's love that he couldn't help but splatter it everywhere he went. When I met his family, I was surprised to find that he wasn't a rarity at all. We got married a little over a year later. I told Jared within the first few weeks of dating that I was perfectly happy with my faith tradition and had absolutely no desire to convert to Catholicism. I was adamant, although I actually knew very little about the Catholic Church. I had picked up bits and pieces from here and there along the way. Of course, all hearsay. The usual. Catholics worship Mary. Catholics pray and worship the saints. Catholics ask priests for forgiveness instead of directly talking to God. Catholics don't read the Bible outside of Mass. Catholics have shallow relationship with God. Catholics only know how to pray from a book. And the one that was proven so incredibly false from the moment I met my future husband, Catholics are only faithful on Sundays. Every other day, they do what they want, then go to confession. I was the worship leader at my church in Denver, and very active in every church I had ever attended in my past. God knew I needed a slow introduction and a gentle transition into the Catholic Church. Jared and his family were more than happy to walk, or at times crawl beside me. It took 3 RCIA classes sprinkled throughout 7 years, attending Mass every Sunday for 6 years, and many conversations, usually involving tears, before I was able to make the commitment to the Catholic Church that would be my own. Not for Jared or our children. I cannot stress enough the importance of this huge decision being one made with eyes wide open that is yours alone. God walked me through so much uncertainty along the way, all rooted in fear. The first was this feeling that I would be betraying my family I loved if I converted. Somehow I felt like the decision would be a slap in my parents' faces, who had actually been the ones who taught me the importance of listening to God's voice and to go where He leads. So in a way, the fact that I was even in the situation was kind of their fault. I was afraid that my siblings wouldn't understand and my non-Catholic friends would feel the need to pull away from me. Of course, none of my fears came to fruition. Throughout it all, God had my hand and gently whispered, "Follow me." Day after day, year after year, God works with me through questions and doubts and fears, and honestly, a great deal of pride. Pride that I somehow knew what was better for me than God did. That if my husband would only give Protestantism a chance, he would discover the same thing. That my children would have a deeper relationship with God if they grew up how I did. In the end, after all these questions, I came to the conclusion that though there was so much beauty in the faith tradition that I had grown up with, it wasn't enough. Even now, I say that with a great deal of hesitations, because it was enough for a time. Then I was called away, and I had to follow. So here I am. My aha moment came after months of ignoring God's voice in my head, which was patiently asking, "Now, what are you waiting for?" And I could give no answer. He had led me this far, right to the door, but only I can make the decision to step through. He had fostered in me the desire to seek His face, to seek truth, to seek and know Him more. Week after week, for years, I watched as my fellow parishioners experienced Jesus in a way I couldn't touch or even begin to fathom, but I longed for it. My heart and soul ached for it. He had strategically placed me in my family. It was in my parents' home that I was taught to worship in spirit and in truth, to pray without ceasing, and the meaning of sacrificial love and covenant marriage. All of these served as a springboard for me to dive right into the disciplines of the church. After I converted to Catholicism, when I was all out of reasons for why I was waiting, it wasn't an outwardly emotional experience. I didn't cry or sob or feel anything really, except peace. Overwhelming, amazing peace. At that moment, doubt about my decision faded, fear faded, and was replaced with peace and relief that this day had finally come. Okay, so what has changed since then? I've been a member of the Catholic Church for a little over a year. The biggest change that I have experienced in my relationship with God is the pace. It sounds weird, but before Catholicism, my faith journey was sprinkled with powerful and emotional moments. Usually, these would happen at retreats and youth events, and I would ride that high for a while. My life was focused on what I was feeling, which directly correlated with how I felt about God for a moment. I was like a hot, bright part of the bonfire, pretty to look at, and you could feel some warmth from afar, but not really comfortable up close. These moments were always followed by a dry patch where I would struggle and stumble around until the next glorious moment. Outside of once in a while service projects, I had very little desire to evangelize in any way. Sharing my faith actually made me feel really uncomfortable. Now I feel that my relationship with God is like the latter part of the bonfire. You can come close enough to warm yourself, to cook some food, to enjoy the moment. These moments burn on for a long time and are easily reinvigorated. Now friends and strangers can congregate and share in those moments with me. God is too big for me to keep to myself. Like my husband, I feel I'm bursting at the seams to share God's goodness. That this is something much better than anything the world has to offer. For many, this journey is not a fast one. If you're contemplating entering the Catholic Church, I encourage you to embrace the process, however short or long that might be. Did you know that you can attend RCIA without having to make the decision to enter the church? I did it twice before deciding to enter the church my third year of RCIA. But I challenge you to completely immerse yourself in the church. In my life, that meant attending weekly masses, practicing several different disciplines, and making time for prayer and contemplation. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I've asked so many silly questions, and I promise you, your friends will answer you between their chuckles. Most importantly, don't be afraid. Fear kept me on the outskirts of what I believe is the fullness of what God has for me in my life. And I've only scratched the surface.
Thank you so much, Danielle, for sharing that with us. It's such a beautiful story.
You're welcome.
So I just have a couple of questions for you that I'd like to follow up with. One, what was your first thought when I asked you to come share your story with us today? You mentioned in here that sharing your faith wasn't something that you really felt comfortable with. Is that still the same? Or
when you accosted me...
After mass, so she couldn't say no.
I couldn't run away. My first thought was, I don't have that great of a story, honestly. You know, growing up in a Christian home, it wasn't like I had some like really rough and tumble, like turning my back on God completely type of story. But whenever I feel that kind of fear in my chest mount up, I know that that's probably something that I need to do, which is why I gave you a response so quickly, because if I would have sat with it, then I would have been like, nah, I'm not doing that.
And I am so glad that you did. I think it's a common misconception that people have, because I didn't fall far away from the church or stop believing in Jesus. I don't have a story. But honestly, we all have a story to share about how we have encountered Jesus, how he has showed up and touched our lives in a meaningful way. Just as there are stories from those who haven't had that encounter or felt like God has turned his back on them in a moment of need. We all have a story to share, and often someone needs to hear that story. So I have to know, how did you and Jared meet? You talk about this soft-spoken country boy.
So Jared and I like to tell people that we met at a homeless shelter and then just let them kind of go with that.
Draw their own conclusions from that.
Right. I was actually an intake counselor at a homeless day shelter in Denver, and Jared was doing his volunteer work at that same shelter. I had started towards the end of his volunteer year, and that is how we met.
So at a homeless shelter.
Yep.
Serving together.
Well, that is a very interesting way to meet a future spouse. I just want to say that I love that you blame your parents for becoming Catholic. So I think that's hilarious.
It was totally
their fault. I love that.
Absolutely.
So you talk about you were fearful of conversion, or you were fearful because you didn't know how they would take it. You were afraid that they might pull away from you. What was their reaction when you told them that you were thinking about becoming Catholic?
My parents have always trusted God. They have always trusted God with their children. They have always believed that God speaks to us personally. So when I told my mom and dad that this was something that I was thinking about, something that I was going to do, they were like, okay, we can't 100% understand your decision, because
they didn't 100% understand the Catholic faith, but they were accepting of it. And they do ask a lot of questions, so that's very wonderful.
And friends, have you had any issues with them pulling away?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We kind of welcome the discourse. One thing that I believe is needed in the body of Christ as a whole is more conversations.
Yes, that is so true. That is exactly why this podcast came into existence, because I believe that we need the ability to have honest conversations and be able to ask questions across the board, not just Catholic to Catholic or believer to believer, but to those who don't affiliate with any traditions, those who have questions, who have left faith because nobody can answer them or nobody will answer them. I feel like we need the ability to have real conversations and to be able to ask real questions.
Absolutely. One thing that was key with Jared and his family is when they spoke to me about their faith, it wasn't with the goal of converting me, which is something that I think that in their heart they wanted to happen, obviously. But I never felt that pressure from them, which is why I was married for 6 years before I ever became Catholic.
So I want to talk a little bit about that. You said that the process took a long time. I imagine that you had a lot of questions.
Yes.
What were some of the more difficult aspects of the Catholic Church for you to overcome?
Hands down, the most difficult aspect of the church was the church's relationship with Mother Mary, honestly, just because it was so foreign to me. Yes, Mary was the mother of God. Yes, we all knew this in the Protestant church, but the added doctrine that's attached to that in the church was completely, completely foreign to me. It was a hard pill to swallow. And at the end of the day, I'm still learning about our mother. I don't have all the answers with that, but it wasn't something that made or broke my faith.
And I think you said something very important there, that it's a process. And I would encourage anybody who's listening who has questions to know that exact sentence, that it's a process. It's something that takes time to understand. The important piece is, are you seeking those answers and are you asking for that understanding? One other piece that you discuss is the importance of making the decision for yourself, not for Jared, not for your children, not for your in-laws, not for anyone but yourself. What would you say to somebody who is contemplating conversion, looking to enter the Catholic Church because of their kids or their spouse or pressure from the outside?
I would say just a first blanket sentence, if that pressure was removed, would you still be a faithful Catholic? And if your answer is no, it is not the time for you to enter the church yet. I told my husband consistently that if something were to happen to him and I was Catholic, I wanted to still be Catholic, not go back to my faith tradition. And so for that to happen, it had to be a decision that was my own. Yes, it was way easier. It's way easier being Catholic when my kids are baptized Catholic and my husband is Catholic. It's way easier. The pressure is so light. But I couldn't let those internal obligations almost force me to make a decision that I was not ready to make.
Early in your testimony, you talk about telling Jared within the first few weeks of dating and saying that you're perfectly happy with your faith tradition and have absolutely no desire to convert to Catholicism.
Correct.
And then you talk about how you didn't convert to Catholicism until 6 years into marriage.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so tell me about the wedding.
Okay, so it was not in the Catholic Church. I tried really, really hard to line it up so that it could be a valid Catholic wedding. We did the engagement counter weekend. It was wonderful, fabulous, I recommend. And I had gone through all of this work. I was working with the Diocese of Des Moines because we were getting married at a vineyard in Iowa. And all of you Catholics out there,
are probably thinking, a vineyard? Well, that's not going to work. Yeah, I did not know that. I did not know that Catholics' weddings do not happen outside. I did not know it had to happen in church until a month and a half before the wedding, or maybe 2 months before the wedding. The diocese, the marriage and family life person from the Diocese of Des Moines, emailed me and said, hey, you can't get married outside. And I was like, what do you mean I can't get married outside? And at that point, everything was rolling, and Jared's like, he was okay with it. So I was like, okay, we're just going to keep going. And after we got married, I started looking into the process of a convalidation. For those of y'all that don't know what a convalidation is, it is the process of, the best way I can put it is getting remarried, but within the presence of the church. The church basically puts their approval on it. You have gotten.
So it's like having your marriage blessed within the church.
Blessed, exactly. Within the church. That's a good way of putting it. The sticking point for me with a convalidation is that the Catholic Church does not recognize your marriage until that date of your convalidation. It seems like a really small thing for a lot of people, which it is a really small thing for a lot of people. But for me, where I was in that at that time, how huge my pride was at that time, I believed wholeheartedly with all my heart that Jared and I were married before God, before our families, before our friends, July 21st, 2013, in that vineyard when we got married. And I could not wrap my head around the first 2 to 3 years of our marriage not being blessed by the church. That was a real sticking point for me. So I did more research because my husband was desperate to participate fully in Mass again. He was desperate to partake of the Eucharist. And so I found this thing called a radical sanation. The Latin of that word means healing from the root, which I thought was really cool. Basically, a radical sanation is what happens when you have a Catholic and non-Catholic parties in a marriage, and the non-Catholic party does not want a convalidation. Then the Catholic party can go on their own to the priest, fill out the paperwork, and get that marriage blessed from the church from the date that it started. So July 21st, 2013, our marriage was then validated in the church. It's kind of like how God's grace extends beyond time.
Yeah, it's totally outside of time and space. So absolutely. Our time is not his time.
Absolutely. So it's a really, really amazing example of God's grace going back in history to bless something, to protect something that has already happened. So that's what we did. And so now our marriage is blessed by the church.
One last question. I have to say, I love this analogy that you have at the end, comparing your relationship with God to a bonfire. And it might be because I'm a country girl myself and I love some Jesus and I love me a good bonfire. So you talk about how your relationship is at that point where the flames have died down and you're left with the hot embers. Tell me a little bit about what that feels like in your day-to-day life.
I feel like I should start by saying I have a 4 and a 6-year-old. My life is completely framed by that lens of having a 4 and a 6-year-old. My day starts off with the beautiful bright eyes of my 4-year-old at 5:45 to 6:15 in the morning. She is such an excitable morning person, to my dismay. So we start off our day running, basically just right out of the gate. We are moving, and my time in prayer does not happen until much later in the morning or in the afternoon, sometimes in the evening. God has really been convicting me lately about praying and being in that time with him in front of my kids. Before, I would use them as an excuse where I can't because my kids need this and they need that and I can't get away. I can't have my personal private time. And then God gave me this realization that I am to be an example to them in everything. And that includes in my relationship with God.
And what a better way to be an example than to show them how to do it. So if I am sitting at my desk reading and praying and listening to worship music, listening to a teaching, and they're right there with me, then they see that this is a part of mom's life. This is the normal thing in mom's life. This is what a relationship with God looks like, so that when as they grow up, they know how to foster a relationship with God that is real. And the fact that my relationship is now kind of like burning embers, it's slower. I'm not looking for that emotional high, that gigantic revelation every time I sit down to read my Bible, every time I sit down to pray. It's like when I spend time with Jared, sometimes we're just sitting on the couch watching a show together and we don't say three words to each other, but we've still spent time. I still get that connection with him. That's kind of how my connection with God is. The more time I spend with him, the closer I feel to him, the more I can hear his voice when it really, really, really matters. If I was waiting for when I felt emotional to come to God, my prayers and my conversation with him would feel almost shallower. It's hard to explain, but if you wait for that emotional high, it's usually when something's going on in your life, right? So if I was really stressed and so I decided to go pray to God, or if I was scared about something, then I go pray to God, or if I was upset or if I was happy, then I go talk to God. It's kind of like that shelf mentality where you just pull God off of a shelf when you need him and then you put him back when you don't. If I did that to any of my friends, they'd be like, can you not? So I really want God to be this constant in my life. I strive for God to be a constant in my life and in my family's life. And when you're not waiting on your emotions to tell you when to move, that's possible.
And so true. You're absolutely correct that if we treated our friends like we treated God, they would not appreciate that.
I think it took a you real quick.
Yeah. Thank you, Danielle, so much for being with us here today. I really appreciate you coming down and sharing with us your journey of faith and how God has worked in your life and how he continues to work in your life.
You're welcome. It has been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening here today. If you are interested in hearing more stories of finding faith and encountering, tune in next week for our next guest. If you have any questions, need someone to journey with, or would be interested in sharing your story, please contact me at findingfaith123@gmail.com.